Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritcha. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam. Tato Jayo Mudirayet. Nasta Prayeshu Abhadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavata Yutama Shloke. Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, let us offer obeisances unto the personality of Godhead, Lord Narayan, unto Naranarayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and unto Srila Vyasadev, the author. By regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam, and by rendering service to the pure devotee, all that is inauspicious within the heart is practically destroyed, and thus loving service to the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental song, is established as an irrevocable fact. Hi. Today we're studying Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 5, Text 30. Lots of prose. I'll just say it for the purification, but I can understand why it wasn't written on the board. It would take three boards to put it on. Tatra tatra pura gramakara keta vata karvata shivira raja ghosha sarta giri panashramadishanu patam avinachara pashadai paribhyu yamano makshi kabhir eva vanagajas tarjana tadana vamahe mehana stivana ngrava shakrid raja prakshepa puti vata duru thais tad aviganayan evashat samstana etasmin Deho palakshane sada padesha ubayanu bhava swarupena swamahi va ma vastane nashamaru pitam mama vimatavad mama viman natvad avikhandita mana prithivim eka chara pari ba dhrama. And that was it. Okay, so that, now you have to listen carefully because it's a very long, very beautiful description of Lord Rishabhadev in his avidut mode. Very beautiful. So please listen attentively because it is also quite long. Try to visualize what's being said here. It's very, very beautiful. Get a vision of how Rishabhadev was existing in relation to all that he was experiencing as he traveled around the world. Rishabhadev began to tour through cities, villages, mines, dark as a dungeon down in the mines, countrysides, valleys, gardens, military camps, cow pens. Sri Kund will like that, huh? Lord Rishabhadev will come visit you at the cow pens. The homes of cowherd men, transient hotels, hills, hills, forests and hermitages. Wherever he traveled, you'll be surprised, all bad elements surrounded him. Just as flies surround the body of an elephant coming from a forest. Well, we don't have experience of the elephants, but we have experience of the cows. If you go near the cows, there's lots of flies. He was always being threatened, beaten, urinated upon, and spat upon. Sometimes people threw stones, stool, and dust at him. And sometimes people passed foul air before him. Thus, people called him many bad names and gave him a great deal of trouble. But he did not care about this. Why? Because he understood that the body is simply meant for such an end. He was situated on the spiritual platform, and being in his spiritual glory, he did not care for all these material insults. In other words, he completely understood that matter and spirit are separate, and he had no bodily conception. Thus, without being angry at anyone, he walked through the whole world alone. It sounds almost sad, right? But it's not sad. We're the ones that we have to feel pity for, not for Rishabhdev, because Rishabhdev is Krishna, he's fully realized. But he walked through the world alone in his original, he was situated in his spiritual platform, in his spiritual glory. And the real pathetic thing is that no one knew. Okay, purport by His Divine Grace, Aisi Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Narottama Dasa Thakur says, Deha Smriti Nahi Yara, Sangsara Bhandan Kaha Tara. When a person fully realizes that the material body and world are temporary, he is not concerned with the pain and pleasures of the body. As Sri Krishna advises in the Bhagavad Gita, who knows the famous verse where Krishna says, don't worry about the pleasures and pains of the body. Everybody knows this verse. Yeah. Okay, translation loud and clear so everybody can hear. Thank you very much. This is Bhagavad Gita 2:14. Huh? Of course, now this is talking about for the soul, the individual soul. But then Prabhupada says, as far as Rishabhadeva is concerned, it has already been explained in the previous verse 19 of this chapter. Idam shariram mama durvibhavyam. He did not at all possess a material body. And therefore, he was tolerant of all the trouble offered to him by the bad elements in society. Consequently, he could tolerate people's throwing stool and dust upon him and beating him. His body was transcendental and consequently did not at all suffer pain. He was always situated in spiritual bliss. And then Prabhupada says, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 18:61, knows 1861. Ishvara sarvabhutanam hridayesher arjuna tishtati brahmayam sarvabhutani yantra rudhani mayaya. Sound familiar? Papa uses it a lot. You know what it means, KV? Okay. Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as anashin, a chariot, made of the material body, man, material energy. Since the Lord is situated in everyone's heart, he is in the heart of hogs and dogs also. If hogs and dogs in their material bodies live in filthy places, one should not think that the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his Paramatma feature also lives in filthy places. Although Lord Vrishabhadeva was maltreated by the bad elements of the world, he was not at all affected. Therefore, it is stated here, Swa Mahima Avasthanena. He was situated in his own glory. He was never saddened due to being insulted in the many ways described above. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkest of ignorance, and my spiritual master is forcing open my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him. Vanchakalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindubhyevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivashadi Gaura Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I guess everybody's feeling clogged up as the winter approaches. From today's purport, I decided to focus on a couple of points. One point is, what is the basis of realizing the temporality of material existence? And a more developed point is that the Lord's supreme purity in all circumstances and how it's manifested in different ways. So Lord Nrsimhadev wasn't affected by what was happening in the material world. He understood that the body was meant that a material, although he didn't have a material body, he understood that the material body was meant to experience misery. We have this material body and we think we are this material body and we think somehow or other I have to enjoy this. But actually it's only meant for one thing. It's meant for realizing that the material energy as a place that separates our consciousness from Krishna can only be a place of suffering. And all those little built-in sufferings, or rather big sufferings, birth, death, old age, and disease, and the miseries caused by the body itself, by other living entities, and by the demigods, are just a reminder that this is not our real home. And Prabhupada says, when a person fully realizes that the material body and world are temporary, he's not concerned with pain and the pains and pleasures of the body. So would someone like to suggest what is the basis for being able to embrace such a realization? What would be the basis, what would be the foundation of being able to accept that this material world is temporary? Yes. Pardon me? A higher taste. And would you like to elaborate a little bit on that? Pardon me? Yes, you know of another existence, a spiritual existence. Because if this world's temporary, there must be something that's eternal. Otherwise, there'd be nothing to compare it to, right? And unless we understand that there is an eternal existence that is beyond what we're experiencing in this world, it's practically impossible to contemplate that the body is temporary. Just like I have a sister. She's like passion personified, but she does have a good heart. And she's a nurse, and she's quite into this whole idea of evolution. And sometimes she tries to discuss it with me, but we don't get very far. We have to stop before we start butting heads. But then she's very attached to her husband. She goes, "And Joni, or she calls me Jaya. Jaya, my love, if anything ever happens to Bobby," that's her husband, "I don't know what I'll do." And I'm thinking, like, what do you mean, if anything ever happens to Bobby? I don't say it. He has already had a heart attack. Because she was a nurse, she was able to, she knew what was going on. He wouldn't let her take an ambulance, get called an ambulance, so she had to drive him to the hospital. And he's on, you know, medication so that he to limit the possibilities of his having a heart. But she always says, if anything happens to him. So she can't even imagine when it will happen. And she's a nurse, and she sees death all the time. But she can't really accept that the world is temporary because she has nothing else. So this just goes to show how profound even a little knowledge of Krishna consciousness is for us. Like Prabhupada says in one place, a little Krishna consciousness goes a long way. Just like another example of a person who realized the temporary nature of material existence, he was such a great soul. His name was Vasudev Dutt. And I would like to recall what Prabhupada had to say about him in his famous offering that Prabhupada made, Vyasa Puja offering. This offering, we discovered it 1 year after Prabhupada left the planet, 1978. It was in the Vyasa Puja book, 1978, called the Vashishashtakam. This was a series of ten lines that Prabhupada had written to his spiritual master as a Vyasa Puja offering in Bombay. That was quite some years after his spiritual master had left. And the Gaudiya Math was in disarray, and Prabhupada was preaching very strongly to them through his Vyasa Puja offering to his own spiritual master. So in one part he said, Vasudev Datta said to the Lord, paying his obeisances, save all the living beings in the material world. Give all their sins and sufferings to me, who am the lowest of all. In this way, all the miseries of the suffering conditioned souls will end. He was the best of the Vaishnavas, Paraduka Duki. And what was the basis of him being the best of Vaishnavas? Does anybody remember? Prabhupada makes a very simple statement. Such. Pardon me? But what was the basis of that realization? Pardon me? Compassion? A little more? Pardon me? Yes, but what was? How could he have such compassion and humility? What was the? Prabhupada, just like we understood that one can embrace the temporality, not the knowledge and the realization of the temporality of material existence, if one understands that there is an eternal existence. So similarly, he could have compassion for all the souls in this world suffering and enjoying because he understood that there is no real happiness in gratifying the senses. So everyone that was gratifying the senses thinking, I'm having a nice time, I'm going to enjoy, or lamenting because they're suffering, he understood there was no real happiness in gratifying. And on that basis, on the basis of that knowledge, based on, of course, his realization of his eternal relationship with the Lord, he could be willing to take the sins of the whole material world. So we can see how profound, if a person is really deeply absorbed in even the basic concepts of Krishna consciousness, if he's profoundly realized, then he can become Paraduka Duki, the best of Vaishnavas, and he can have so much compassion. I was so amazed when I read that the first time. He knew that there is no real happiness in gratifying senses. I thought, wow, it's such a basic thing. And still, it evades me. I mean, sometimes I get the insight, but how often I'm thinking of when I get this prasadam, or if I make this arrangement, or if this, that, and the other thing, based on the idea that I think that I can make some little comfortable arrangement for myself with this. And then Prabhupada says, now this is just talking about a jiva soul who's very realized. Prabhupada said, as far as Rishabhadeva is concerned, it has already been explained. I will read that verse from the 19th verse of this chapter. Idam shadiram mama durvi bhavyam sattvam hime riddayam yatra dharma prishte krito me yat adharam adharma arad ato himam rishabham prahur arya. He's talking about himself in this verse. He says, My transcendental body, Satchidananda Vigraha, looks exactly like a human form. But it is not a material human body. It is inconceivable. I am not forced by nature to accept a particular type of body. I take on a body by my own sweet will. My heart is also spiritual, and I always think of the welfare of my devotees. Therefore, within my heart can be found the process of devotional service, which is meant for the devotees. Far from my heart have I abandoned irreligion, adharma, and non-devotional activities. They do not appeal to me. Due to all these transcendental qualities, people generally pray to me as Rishabhadev, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the best of all living beings. This is Rishabhadev. So if the Lord's devotees can gain so much relief from the pangs of material misery just by understanding that they're not the body, that they're an eternal servant of Krishna, and that there is no real happiness in gratifying the senses, then what to speak of the one they're devoted to, which is Lord Rishabhadev. And he's the source of the material and spiritual worlds. Krishna says, right? Aham sarvasya prabhavumat tak sarvam pravartite iti matva bhajanti mam buddha bhava samanvitaha. I am the source of all spiritual material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who know this perfectly, it's funny because the wise who know this perfectly engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. Or you could say, the wise who know this perfectly engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. Well, the thing is, that as far as I can understand, it perfectly can apply to either one. The wise who know this perfectly, or can apply to both. The wise who know this perfectly... Oh, so they moved it around sometimes, yeah. So you have to know it perfectly. And if you know it perfectly, then you'll engage in perfect devotional service. Anyway, so the Lord, of course, He's beyond all His dualities, and He's always in bliss. So what is wonderful about Lord Rishabhadev's being transcendental to all this material suffering and all these attacks on his transcendental body? What's wonderful is that he bothers to come to this world and exhibit this. Why does he do this? Because he wants to show us what it means to be a perfect human being. And of course, Srila Prabhupada reminds us that the Lord is transcendental in his spiritual form as Rishabhadev, and he's also transcendental as he travels within the heart of every living being in this world. Just like Prabhupada said in one lecture, it's quite a graphic way to describe the Supersoul. It's embarrassing, as it should be, that the Supersoul is like a master walking his dog. So the master goes outside with his dog. Why? Yeah. The dog has to go out every day for a walk to stay healthy, and he has to pass stool and urine. So the master does that faithfully, twice a day, for the dog's entire life. And Prabhupada says, in the same way, Krishna is going with us from body to body, patiently waiting while we pass stool and urine and all these different bodies. But Prabhupada said he's not affected at all. He's never affected by the material energy. So two examples came to my mind when I was reading this, when I was brooding over this purport, because at first I was thinking, how do I speak about this? I thought, okay, I just do what I always do, just drag from other parts of the folio points that I remember in relation to the points that Prabhupada's making in the purports. So the wonderful point, we often hear that Krishna is in the heart of every living being. But it's really nice to meditate on how that happens and how we can convince ourselves and others that the Lord is actually there. So there's this wonderful verse and purport in Canto 2, Chapter 2, Text 35 of the Bhagavatam, where I believe it's Shukadeva Goswami tells Maharaj Parikshit, the personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, is in every living being, along with the individual soul. And this fact is perceived and hypothesized in our acts of seeing and taking help from the intelligence. Did anybody catch that? Should I read it again? Did you understand what was just said? Huh? Okay. The personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, is is in every living being, along with the individual soul. So we have the body, there's the Lord, and there's the, right, the soul is inside. And this is perceived and hypothesized. We can hypothesize means by reasoning, we can come to the conclusion. And how? What do we perceive and hypothesize upon? Our ability to perceive what's going on around us, and how we take help from our intelligence. Intent? No, there's no Papa told Govindasi, there is no such thing as instinct. Yeah. So if we understand that we are beings who perceive what's going on around us, and that with our intelligence, that there's this intelligence that's guiding our acts of perception and everything else we do, then this is pointing towards the existence of the soul within the heart and the super soul. And Prabhupada elaborates on this in the purport. It's based on what I understand, it's based on from the Sandarbhas by Jiva Goswami. So Prabhupada says, the presence of the Paramatma in everyone's company is not very difficult to realize, even for the common man. The procedure is as follows. So I broke, Prabhupada was very elaborate. I broke it down into small steps. So please listen carefully, try to understand. With a little intelligence, one can contemplate the difference between the body and the self. Just like Prabhupada was at a class one time. He was giving a class in a school of many young boys. And he was telling the, he asked, who is the most intelligent boy in this class? So they all elected one boy that came up with his little glasses and his, he was obviously the nerd, the local nerd. You know what a nerd is? It's the modern term for the most intelligent person in the class. you know, the ears sticking out and the glasses. And anyway, he was obviously, knew he was a nerd and he was proud of it. And so Prabhupada said, okay, so touch your head. And he was touching his head and touching his, said, touch your nose, touch your, and he was looking at Prabhupada like, you know, like Prabhupada wasn't very smart. So the, Prabhupada was having him touch different parts of his body. And then Prabhupada said, now touch yourself. And then he got a confused look on his face because, of course, he couldn't find himself, right? He wasn't so intelligent as he thought he was. So, but with a little, thus, with a little use of the intelligence, we can understand that the self is different from this body, right? Okay, so is everybody on the same page? Do we understand that the self is different from the body? We can't touch the self, right? Okay. And also, with the same intelligence, one can understand that that I am different from the other things and beings that I see. Though there's a difference between myself, my body, and all the other animate and inanimate objects around us. So if there's a difference between myself and my body and the difference from what I perceive, then we could also understand that there is something in here that is seeing, right? This the scientists can't understand. Scientists do not understand consciousness. They don't understand the entity that is perceiving. But we understand it, right? Does everybody understand that there's a difference between who is seeing and what is being seen? I see Krishna Das. There's a difference between the entity that is seeing Krishna Das and Krishna Das. It's a difference, right? So there's a difference for the individuals here. Is that okay with everybody? Okay, so next. We have to also understand that my ability to see and my ability to move around and do things doesn't come from me. I can't do anything without all the other energies that are surrounding me, right? If I didn't have the brain and I didn't have the body and I didn't have all and what I see, I'm not independent to do any of these things. Something, there's energy that's allowing me to perceive. There's energy that I'm perceiving, and none of it depends on me. It's being supplied by another source. The subtle energy and the gross energy that makes up what's called my body and what's giving me the perception to see doesn't come from me, right? Nothing that I see or my ability to see, it comes from me. Did I make this body? Did I make anything? It's not me, it's not mine. But even though it's not me and it's not mine, I'm completely dependent on it. Otherwise, I can't see. So the power, the seer has no power to see or to move independently because all ordinary actions and perceptions depend on various forms of energy supplied by various combinations of gross and subtle forms of natural energy. Make sense? Shishwara Gopinath ki jai. So in this way, we know that everything that we perceive and everything that we see is conditioned by an energy that's outside of us. So the conclusion is that matter and spirit are two different entities, right? That there is a spiritual energy and there's a material energy. And one of the basic indications of the difference is that we are never satisfied. We, as living entities, eternal beings, are never satisfied in contact with this material energy. We're always striving for satisfaction, and we never get it. At least not for more than a second. Yum, yum, yum. That's my basic satisfaction in life. Or sleep for a while. Okay, so the things we see cannot be animate unless we accept that someone is using and directing the intelligence. So we take help from the intelligence just like we take help from a friend. If we don't take help from our intelligence, we're considered insane, right? People who don't accept the use of the intelligence or stop applying their intelligence, they're considered mad. They don't act in an intelligent way, and they're considered either ghostly haunted or just really insane. And intelligence is everywhere. Prabhupada says the intelligence is all-pervading, like Kanchanvali was mentioning about instinct, right? Prabhupada says at night when he was translating, he sees these little entities. They're he calls them a full stop, like a period, and they're crawling across his page. And if Prabhupada puts his finger in front, the little thing tries to go around, or it tries to go away. The intelligence is all pervading. Where is this intelligence coming from? The scientists can't say. And Prabhupada said, the higher authority who is present and residing within every living being is the super self. Intelligence is the form direction of the super soul, of the person who is the personality of Godhead. It's a little bit of an intricate argument. Have you been able to follow it? So in this way, if we just use our intelligence just a little bit, we can understand that there is a supreme intelligence situated within every living entity and directing everything in this world. Just like we know that in India, the fact that there are as few car accidents as there are in India shows there has to be a God. So by taking advantage of the guidance of the Supersoul in the form of intelligence, we can either continue to study and to put into practice our conclusion that I am not this body, or we can choose to remain in the false material identification, fancying ourselves to be the possessors and doers. This is our only freedom that we have. Our freedom consists in orienting our desire either towards the ignorant material conception or the true spiritual conception. This is the only independence that we have. And according to how we use that independence, there's a lot of different results that we get. Yes? Prabhupada says, our freedom consists in orienting our desire either toward the ignorant material conception or misconception, he says, or to the true spiritual conception, that I'm eternal soul, that there is a Supreme Lord, and I have a relationship with that Lord. So when Prabhupada was saying, we hear so often that the Lord is present in the heart of every living being, he remains unaffected by the miseries of material existence. it's nice to contemplate this and to follow a very detailed description how even a common man, if he uses even a little bit of intelligence, can understand this. And then Jiva Goswami, he goes so far as to say, we might think that the super soul, which is directed with the all-pervading intelligence in this world, is the supreme, but he's not the supreme. Because if he were the supreme, that would mean he's the order supplier of the living entities. Because he's there to help us fulfill our desires, right? And hopefully he's waiting for us to turn our face towards him and so that we can come out of our illusion. But he's an expansion of Krishna, who is above all souls and above the super soul as well. Another example I thought about how the Lord as the super soul is never contaminated, or the Supreme Lord is never contaminated, Rishabhadev was never contaminated, even though so many people tried to contaminate him in horrible ways, was the Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, when he was making his commentary on Krishna's Rasa Leela. He said that the Lord, who was in the heart of the gopis, expanded himself as Krishna, and that no one could criticize the Lord, who was already in their heart, for coming outside and dancing with the gopis. So these were the things that came through my mind when I heard that the Lord is eternally pure, and he's never affected by material nature. So of course the Rasa Leela was never a material engagement in the first place. But Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur argues philosophically for that, that no one can criticize the super soul for coming outside of the body of the gopis and dancing with them. So this is Rishabhadev, who is an expansion of Krishna, and he was situated in his own glory and never saddened due to being insulted in the many ways described above. So one may wonder why the Lord, who is so pure, why did he allow so many people to offend him? Why did? Because it's dangerous for the soul, right, to offend the Lord. Anybody have any thoughts on that? He respected the free will of the living entity. Is that what you're saying? Okay, that could be one idea. Yes. He was giving the ruffians a chance too. Actually, we'll hear later descriptions. He was so beautiful that even though he was walking around like a madman and completely dirty and grimy, that married women would become attracted to him. He was so beautiful. It happened with Sukadeva Goswami too, yes? Yes, yes. That's the main point I was looking for. He did eventually stop allowing these people to interact with them because he didn't want to implicate them more, obviously. But he was also showing an example what it means for a self-realized soul to be really transcendental to the material energy. Devotees get a little taste of this. Like I was speaking to one devotee yesterday, and I asked the devotee, "How was your day? And how would you feel today?" And the devotee was smiling, said, "I felt really bad the whole day, but I'm happy." So even a devotee's body or mind give them trouble, they're happy because they engage in devotional service the whole day. So even sometimes we feel the body and mind gives us trouble. Or what to speak about the Sankirtan devotees who go out and meet so many opposing elements. Anybody who's preaching, frontline preaching, meets so many opposing elements. But they feel happy because it's like they're going into a burning fire, but they don't get burned. Because they're protected by Krishna, they're protected by transcendental knowledge. So the idea is that by contemplating and discussing the Lord's supreme purity and the purity of his internal potency, the purity of devotional service, then our attention will be drawn away from what Prabhupada calls the glaring material energy and to something that's really brilliant and pure and eternal. So thank you for listening patiently. I know it's a little anticlimactic. Gopinathacharya was supposed to give class, but he's having some virus attacking him. I tried to persuade him last night, come and give class. So I just took a little today, we looked a little bit at realizing that if we want to know about the temporary material energy, if we want to really understand how it's only temporary, we have to really focus on the eternal spiritual energy, make that our focus in life, and that way, by comparison, we'll be able to see that this world is temporary and not fit for our habitation, at least not eternally. And also that the Lord is supremely pure, and we looked at different ways to understand how He's pure, how He manifests that purity. So if anybody would like to make a comment or correction or... Rick is trying to bring this Tulsi's table to an eternal, to resemble its eternal counterpart by making it brilliant. I love it when devotees do that. Yes, Karnmai. Can you say it again, Rick? Right, right. Yes, yes, yes. Right, thank you. Yes. 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 Yeah, that's called, I remember when I was hanging around with my teenage friends and I didn't like what was going on. You know, devotees had that experience. We weren't very excited about life. Teenagers tend to get a little depressed or out of sync, or just. And then my friends would look at me, "Hey, what's going on?" And I would say, "You have to listen to that voice inside." And they would look at me like, "There she is going off again. She's nuts," you know. But there was the voice. It was a very subtle voice. It was always talking to me, and it wasn't just some. You know, I wasn't completely crazy. I was somewhat crazy, but but I knew there was somebody in there, but. Yes, it's there. We all know it's there. Thank you. Huh? Yeah, for instance. And then we think, either we're too nervous or... Just a second, my daughter's online. I have to tell her I'm giving class. Yes, dear. When what? Well, according to Srila Prabhupada, he was 8 years old in the Krishna book. So, but if we understand correctly, Krishna does manifest himself in different ways because he has an eternal spiritual form. So for Mother Jashoda, no matter how old he is, he's little. And for the gopis, no matter how old he is, he's this beautiful adolescent youth. So while they were here, they manifested different bodily forms as part of the human lila to attract everybody's attention. But according to his time on the planet, he was only 8. Is that all right? Yes, yes, Hari Bhakti. Yes. Right. Right. Yeah, it's just an argument that he gives. Because everyone everyone who's a little educated in the Bhagavad theology knows that the soul, the super soul and Krishna are non-different. So it's just it's basically an argument. Doesn't mean that the super soul really came out, but he's just trying to, you know, the super soul is eternally pure. The gopis are, if for argument's sake they have material bodies, which they didn't, but it's just another approach that's taken by the acharyas. Pardon me? Yeah, that's true. In their heart of hearts. Yeah, that's true. Yes, Prabhu. With this little? Yes. 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 Infinite regress, yeah. Yeah. Yes. The same axiomatic approach that we have towards the existence of God, you'll find that very similar axiomatic truths are there in these people who are talking about reason. Every body of knowledge has its axiomatic premises. It means that they're accepted realities. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And that's also there in science. It's also there in, like, they talk about Occam's razor, like the razor of reasoning. But even a person who is attached to reason knows that reason can only extend so far, and then they have to rely on axiomatic truths that everybody accepts, but that nobody can prove. You understand? So they choose to accept certain axiomatic premises, like, for instance, man is mortal. Right? I mean, you can't go to every man and see if he's mortal or not, but it's accepted that man is mortal. Yeah, but they also they put it up, but they also, then anything, any argument anybody has about anything is based on faith. It's always based on faith. Faith is always there. That's why the living entity has to choose to orient towards the faith that he's an eternal soul, or to the faith that he is a temporary entity who's, you know, randomly placed in this universe. So we have that choice where we want to repose our faith. So we can say, you can choose your axioms and repose your faith in them. We choose our axioms, and that's there is no way of avoiding a leap of faith in any case. There's just no way of avoiding it. It's not possible. Yes, 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 yes. But they never can prove anything. They never really can. I'm coming, Consul, just a second. Even science itself, or even philosophy, there's always a certain margin of error that has to be taken into account, because everybody knows that error is human. And there's even an argument in science that you can never have a fault-proof hypothesis, because there's always an error of margin. Sorry, a margin of error. So that's why Prabhupada says, ultimately, we can orient... Let me see what's said here. Prabhupada says it very concisely. Did I go to the beginning? No, I had to put it in, sorry. He says, our freedom consists in orienting our desire, faith, intention, right, either toward the ignorant material conception or the true spiritual conception. And a person who is situated in spiritual conception has an advantage over those who are relying simply on the ignorant material conception, because as long as one accepts the limitations of the material energy, one is bound by the material energy, just like the scientists and the philosophers can never come to any conclusion because they're attached. They want to exploit the resources of the material energy. They're dependent on them. Whereas a person, if he even philosophically steps outside, experiences a certain kind of freedom that's not possible for a person who's dependent on the material energy to experience. Even theoretically, there's a freedom that you experience, even if you allow yourself to theoretically orient your desire towards the concept of eternal spiritual life. And persons who, of course, if you're a very powerful, an Uttama Bhakta, you can convince such persons. But even Srila Prabhupada sometimes just said, just give them prasadam. course, a very brilliant intellect can tackle them on all levels. I have to admit that that's not me. But ultimately, it will boil down to this. Where do you orient your desire or your intention or your faith? Yes? Yes.
So you have to do the experiment if you want to
prove it. Right.
But we can also say it to them, so you can prove it. There's one thing they say it.
Yeah.
They
can't. Prabhupada, and Prabhupada is so strong in this point. And they go later. Prabhupada says, I kick on your face with boots. Kick on his face with boots. He said, trust no future. Prabhupada is so strong. And he's not just someone who's trying to win an argument. He's trying to win back the soul, you know. And he sees that this godless preaching that, you know, we can create life, he sees that this is misguiding the whole of the world. All living entities, and especially the human beings, are being so misguided that they have to stay in this trap of illusion forever. Or for what's practically forever, based on this misguiding. I've been just listening to a series of talks of Prabhupada and Prabhupada, and I kick on your face with boots. It's yes, I will come to you, but first Freddie wanted to say something. Freedom, yes. There is no freedom. You're right. There's no actual freedom for the soul. The soul is either under the control of God directly or under the control of one of God's energies. Always on the internal energy or the external energy, but Prabhupada says the freedom surrendered to Krishna means complete freedom of life. And who's the example? Who's the example of a soul that's supremely free? Famous in our scripture. Narada Muni Vajai Vina. He can go anywhere. So there's no freedom. It's an illusion. But if one wants to experience the fullest capacity that a soul can have, as far as the experience of freedom is concerned, one has to be willing to admit that there is a supreme controller and take shelter instead of competing. Is that all right? Yes. Yes. Or just to say, we also heard, our freedom consists in orienting our desire. That's the one freedom we have, orienting our desire to the material conception or the spiritual conception. That's the freedom that we have. And a lot, you know, depending on where you orient your freedom, you determine the quality of your existence and your experience. Is that all right? Yes, Prabhu.
You said,
no what?
No
right. It's the super soul. One time Prabhupada was on the beach with Govinda Dasi, and Prabhupada was asking her why the crabs move towards the ocean. And she said, instinct, Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, there's no such thing as instinct. It's the super soul. It's called instinct, but it's the super soul. How does the baby know when he comes out of the womb? Prabhupada says, to go for the mother's breast. Who told him? It's not instinct. It's the super soul. This is what you wanted. This is what you get. This is your shelter for the time being. It's all being guided by the... And if we can... It comes to life when we talk about it. Otherwise, it remains a little theoretical for us. So it's really... That's why it might sometimes be at moments a little dry when you're going through the philosophical steps. But when you actually talk about how it's going on, then you can see it. You can observe it in nature. You can observe it in ourselves and in each other. And then life becomes full of the presence of Krishna. Yes. Yes.
And if you study animals, there's certain things that they do that are so far out. There's no, like, they couldn't figure it out. Like oh, we'll just say it's not the land they would strike.
Yeah.
Okay, so
yeah.
But there's some things that animals do that are just too far out to explain. You can't just explain the evolution. It's impossible.
Right.
Right. They know that and they just think.
Yeah.
Scientists put those aside because they can't explain
it. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that book was quite revolutionary, yeah? Well, the thing is, if you—that's the point. If you, a person who is interested in God consciousness, he sees Krishna's influence everywhere. He becomes fascinated by the world. He becomes fascinated by everything because he says, "Oh, there's Krishna. There's my Lord. There he is." They should be embarrassed. Anyway, thank you all for your participation and for listening patiently and giving such enthusiastic contributions. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Prabhupada anugas ki jai.